96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Laquan McDonald in Chicago, Freddie Gray in Baltimore, Jamar Clark in Minneapolis, three young black men killed during incidents involving police officers, and those are just a few. Each death more unsettling than the last. So what do these cases now in the criminal justice system mean for the Black Lives Matter movement? We're talking about that question and much more tonight. My guests are Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver, president of the Exceptional Leadership Institute for Women, trial lawyer A. Scott Bolden, and Kareem Ali, community activist and co-founder of CAPSOC, creating a profound sense of community. If you want to comment about this issue, where are we with the Black Lives Matter movement as we begin? Again, the Freddie Gray trial. Lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Avis, Scott, and Kareem, thank you all for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Let me start with you, Kareem.
Sure.
You've been doing some work in Baltimore. Before we get to that piece, what is your sense of the feeling in Baltimore as we start this Freddie Gray trial? Are people kind of sitting back? Are they waiting? Or is there actual tension? Because the protests have been somewhat mild.
Well, I believe that there's some tension, but I also believe there's a quickening that's happening in Baltimore. People are waiting. They're waiting on a transformation. They want to see something new. I think that the time right now is ripe to create a conversation that will help the community transform itself. So, yes, I think that there are factions in Baltimore that are happy, in fact, that, you know, this case is going to trial. But there are others that, for whatever reason, they're always going to see the negative in whatever happens. And so they're sitting on pins and needles, perhaps putting themselves in a position where, hey, I'm going to go down. I'm going to, you know, stand in front of the courthouse and I'm going to wail. And, you know, you're going to always have, I think, both sides. But mm-hmm. I think the more important thing is that the work that we've done over the last year has seen organizations that are on the ground that want to see a complete transformation in their city.
Well, I want to get to that in just a bit because there's a lot of information coming from what you're doing. But I want Scott to briefly take me inside the courthouse, inside the courtroom.
Sure.
Right now. Judge Barry Williams says that he expects that opening arguments will happen tomorrow. Why is Officer William
Porter.
Thank you. William Porter on trial first. There's six officers here. Is this luck of the draw? Why him first?
Well, a couple things. One, all six police officers wouldn't be tried together. There'd be conflicts of interest, their right to confront each other, as well as whether some statements could be used against some and not others, which would be prejudicial to the jurors sitting for all six. William Porter is pretty important because essentially the Baltimore County prosecutor has brought a case that indicates or argues that each of these officers at various levels were criminally negligent. And William Porter was the individual police officer who was called to the scene, not at the police station, but called to the scene. He observed Freddie Gray at a really critical time before he got to the hospital, before he got to the police station, but also after he was arrested. He observed him, and if you believe the public media statements that he's made, or at least are in these reports, that he either indicated to police officer Goodson, who's the driver and being charged with second-degree murder, that either you should go to the hospital, you should take him to the hospital. I can't tell whether he's lying or faking or not. It's always a big deal when Freddie Gray gets arrested, but he put them on notice that something was wrong.
So is he the big domino that if he falls one way or another, that could have an impact on the other five.
Well, whether he's convicted or not, it'd be super important to the prosecution of the other five, for the prosecution of the other five to be convicted, because his statements can be used against the other five officers, which will be critically important. Because remember, you know, this is not a murder case or a manslaughter case. We're in the traditional notions of what we've come to know. This is a criminal negligence case. It's a very tough case to prove, because even if the police officers were negligent, that doesn't mean they were criminally negligent.
Dr. Avis, let me go to you. This isn't just about Baltimore. This is also about Jamar Clark in Minneapolis. This is about, the many cases that we have seen, Laquan McDonald in Chicago. When it comes to the Black Lives Matter movement, do you think that this is a watershed moment for the movement with all of these cases moving through the judicial system?
It is a watershed movement in the sense that we are at a point where we are at least seeing some action in the criminal justice system, which, quite frankly, for typically it's, you could say statistically, it's pretty much an anomaly. It far too often when Black people in particular are the victims of police violence that leads to death, that leads to, you know, particularly unarmed folks. It's very rare that it even gets this far.
Absolutely.
What's happening in Chicago, for example, is an especially egregious case, given the fact that we know there was a substantial cover-up in that case that went all the way up to the mayor himself, and in fact was only uncovered as a result of a Freedom of Information Act due to good journalism. So, you know, we have reason to believe from past history that when things happen like this, the natural modus operandi is to cover it up and to have people just look the other way. So the fact that for one reason or another, in all of these cases, I think Baltimore perhaps being the most aggressive, in that you did have action by the prosecutor there, that wasn't, her hand was not forced in any way, and yet she still received blowback. This creates a moment in which we have a very special situation where, for once, it seems we have cases that are actually going through the judicial system.
Well, Avis, hold, Dr. Avis,
what are going to be the outcome?
Hold on. I need to go to the phone lines. We've got some folks calling in. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Scott, calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. My point would be is that we have to use all of our resources. We have to muster up everything that we have in yesteryear's technology and the 21st century technology to keep all these types of stories in front of the public. It's imperative now that we step forward, because if we don't, we're going to slip back into the 1930s where these things were hidden and we would be even more damaged. I'll get off the phone and listen to you all's comments.
Scott, thank you so much. I appreciate that. You want to jump on that real quick, Scott, briefly?
Yeah, I think the caller is absolutely right. He may be my namesake, but he speaks truth to power in that. Think about it. We've been telling people in America for 200 years that police brutality, these shootings have taken place and occurred in our community. Every African-American almost in this country has a story about being abused by the police. And now we have social media, we have iPhones, we have videos. But for that technology, I'll be honest with you, whether you're talking about Chicago, Baltimore, Washington, Minnesota, it doesn't really matter. Without that, New York, without those iPhones and video, instant videos or pictures, we simply could not tell the story, and we could not educate those who don't look like us that this, in fact, is the police force that we are supporting and that the politicians are supporting.
Kareem, what Scott is talking about is that simmering anger that has been part of African American history for decades, some would argue, even at least a century, when it comes to dealing with the police. With that in mind, what kind of conversations are you having in Baltimore around that anger and dealing with community issues?
Well, what we saw with the anger was what we burned our communities, right? Well, we've got to use a different approach and a different method. What worked during the civil rights era, we don't believe will work the same in the 21st century construct. We have to really approach this problem in a different way. But it was, and I have to say, I felt the same anger. At the end of 2014, looking at what happened in Ferguson, you know, mm-hmm. Eric Garner, right? What happened in South Carolina? It seemed like there was a melting, like it was about to just explode. Being a common citizen in the media, I felt that I had to do something. You know, I my tagline is, you know, providing quality media, you know, an expression, you know, of the relevant information that's in the world. How could I use the power of the media to open up this conversation? And so my partner and I decided that we would have a forum where, because one of the things I also saw was that the story of police and the story of community really was not being told. The world of the community, I don't believe, is really known by law enforcement. And I think, and likewise, the world of law enforcement, I don't believe that the community is all that aware of, even with the things that have happened between.
And I want to find out a little bit more about that, but I need to go back to the phones quickly. Shantae, calling from Centerville, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
I think it needs to start with some sort of legislation and community action as well, because all of these killings, you know, they take people up, they prosecute them, but time and time again, it's the same story. You know, they either get off or they get some very light sentence. They're not being upheld to the same standards that your everyday citizen is being upheld to. Like, we can't just go around shooting people and, you know, we get a six-month sentence and have to pay some sort of restitution.
What do you think about that, Avis?
I think she's absolutely right. And in addition to that, I believe there needs to be some financial culpability. I mean, when you think about the millions upon millions upon millions of dollars that states and cities are paying out all across this nation just to settle police brutality cases and cases, wrongful death cases. And then those police officers continue to draw their pension. They continue to get their salaries and continue to stay on the payroll. You know, I believe if there was some not only legal culpability but also financial culpability, you'd see some change in behavior. You can't train your way out of this. You have to have some actual
But I wonder, I mean, and I don't disagree that there should be culpability, but I wonder when we're going to get to the root of what the real issue is. I mean, when we were talking in the green room about what happened in Chicago, that split second that the officer took to shoot that that armed gentleman,
mm-hmm.
that went to a mentality, right? That went to whether or not
Absolutely.
He saw that person as a human being.
Or not.
So regardless of the legislation that we create, what is going to transform, you know, our thinking about who we are as human beings?
At least for the police officers. I mean, the legislation would be a good step, but there's only one piece of legislation that will change this, and that is the standard of review or the standard of operation by police departments all around this country. You know, the caller is right, and Avis, you're right also. Police officers are different. They have a badge. They have a gun. They have a license to kill. And I must tell you, whether they follow police protocol or not, whether they make mistakes or not and shoot and kill too soon, the bottom line is this. All they have to say is that they either felt threatened for their life or they threatened the lives of others or they felt unsafe. And that's enough for them, quite frankly, to avoid prosecution, indictment, and otherwise, unless you have overwhelming facts and evidence like you do in Chicago, whereby that just simply wasn't the case because the law protects them. Secondly, and I won't belabor this, but these are the human rights of these young black men are being violated.
Mm-hmm.
As I watched the video in Chicago and elsewhere in South Carolina, where was the humanity in these police officers?
You know what? I want to talk about that, too, as it relates to Chicago also. But I'm going to have to take a break in just a bit. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Black Lives Matter movement as we move into the very beginnings of the Freddie Gray trial. We, of course, have other issues that are constantly percolating. We've got the situation in Minnesota with Jamar Clark. We have Laquan McDonald in Chicago. Federal investigation now requested by the Illinois Attorney General. A lot of moving parts, and I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think about what is happening with all of these cases and indeed what Black Lives Matter has to do with it directly or indirectly. Because if you're a black person, then you have a black life that you are concerned about. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Samuel, stay on the phone. We're going to talk to you next. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds.